My name is Michael McCusker, and I'd like to give a little pitch that I wrote. This is a listener-sponsored radio station beaming at you from the lower left side of the FM band. And I wrote this, so as I usually give in my disclaimer, this is my opinion, and perhaps my opinion only in the entire cosmos, which, of course, today I am banking that it is not. Listener-sponsored is something worth considering. This station advertises nothing but itself, which can perhaps be a bit distracting and at times seem excessive. Yet KMUN must constantly remind its listeners that only their support keeps the station on the air. You have kept me on the air for nearly 25 years, a quarter century of frenzied, fringe-filled half hours on KMUN almost every week, generally on Thursdays. Your support has allowed me an independence rare to radio broadcasting. Not all of you agree with the points of view I introduce, whether my own or through the writings of others whose thoughts, opinions, and ideas I read on these weekly radio rants. None of you have suggested I be removed from the broadcast schedule, though listeners have engaged me in vehement debate on the phone or in a few public establishments I inhabit. My sister told me once that Astoria must suffer a large power surge every Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. from all of the radios being shut off simultaneously. She also said I am fortunate to have such an outlet for my rather perverse points of view. Which is precisely the point. KMUN does indeed represent a daily working example of the First Amendment. Its menu is eclectic and well-inspired. Risk is always prevalent. Some programs sink, others persevere. KMUN takes the chance with ideas and concepts commercial radio never dares try. This, if for nothing else, is its intrinsic value. You, the people, own KMUN. You, not advertisers or other special interest groups, decide what will continue to assail your ears. If you don't like a program, and if enough other listeners agree with you, it's gone. Fortunately for me, you have exercised your power benignly. You have so far decided that even the most fringiest of opinions and ideas must at least be considered, which widens the severely constricted and self-serving boundaries of public debate presented on commercial media. Now, public broadcasting is once more relentlessly savaged by a Republican-bullied Congress that cannot abide it. This past spring, while the nation was beguiled by a speciously tailored deficit crisis fashioned by teabag abuse of Congress, that same Congress surreptitiously killed funding that allowed repairs to public radio and television electronics. For KMUN, that is $88,000 for replacing the air room board and for making other station upgrades. During an earlier period of a Republican Congress attempting to destroy public radio and television, KMUN program director Joe Vincenza wrote in the March 1995 issue of the station's monthly program guide, The Current. And pardon me while I dig that out. Quote, I have seen, heard, and read more about public broadcasting since January 1st than in all the 10 years before combined. But now we all know, each and every one of us, what public broadcasting is. Or do we? Just like happiness, public broadcasting means different things to different people. Actually, I have come to wonder if we are all viewing and listening to the same programming. Really? Some turn on their radio and hear a liberal-based attack on American society and values, calling for the dismantlement of all we hold dear and true. While others can't stand to listen or watch because all they see and hear is an agent of propaganda for the corporate monsters, with designs of breeding all the life and free will from each and every person in the land, which they are poisoning, by the way. We are anarchistic. Provocatively reckless, dangerously passive. You name it, we've been called it in the past few months. Why does Congress, now tyrannized by Tea Party Republicans, constantly want to destroy public broadcasting? Is it because we are too liberal? Vincenzo wondered back then. Is it because the government is over budget? Is it because Rupert Murdoch wants the frequencies? Is it because CPB, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, pays its executives too much? Is it because we cater to society's elite? Do we deal too much with truth? Do we live too many lies? Is it something I've completely missed? Is it politics? And a little P.S. to that. That year, Theodore Bloomfield, former conductor of the Portland, now Oregon Symphony, and the Berlin Philharmonic, and a KMUN volunteer DJ of classical music, used a Mendelssohn piece on his weekly radio program to describe what he called, quote, the storm in Congress, unquote, over public support of the arts and media. And this is sort of something I had written before, and I'm in a nostalgic mood, so I thought I'd combine a few bald pitches over the years and see what kind of a stew they might make. Now I'd like to read something that I wrote, so the disclaimer is in place. And it has to do with not only public broadcasting, but the concept of the First Amendment in general. I call it Talk of the Nation, with the subtitle Things That Touch the Heart. Freedom to differ is not limited to things that do not matter much. That would be a mere shadow of freedom. The test of its substance is the right to differ as to things that touch the heart of the existing order, and that is U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry A. Blackmun. And from U.S. Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black during the Pentagon Papers case of 1971, the government's power to censor the press was abolished so that the press would remain forever free to censure the government. The press was protected so that it could bear the secrets of government and inform the people. And one other, by the great Joseph Mitchell for New Yorker magazine. I do not write about the little people. They are as big as you are, whoever you are. The first newspaper published in the English American colonies hit the streets on September 25, 1690, but was soon suppressed because of unkind remarks about the British crown. 45 years later, in 1735, John Peter Zenger was put on trial and acquitted for defamation against the English king, in his newspaper, the New York Weekly Journal, which raised issues of a free press that contributed directly to the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. 2 years after the Bastille was stormed in Paris to set the stage for the French Revolution, the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments tacked onto the Constitution of the United States as almost an afterthought, but its mainframe inspiration for James Madison and Thomas Mason, who fomented them, were adopted in 1791 as the most basic rights of the common citizenry, the Ten Commandments of American Civilization. The First Amendment states simply and clearly that government has no right to interfere with freedoms of speech, press, or religion, or with public gatherings, which are indispensable to political and personal liberty and are necessary to abolish if liberty is to be thwarted. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And that is the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon State Constitution is even stronger than the First Amendment in regard to freedom of speech and press. Quote, no law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever, but every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right. Unquote. The First Amendment guarantees the freedom of speech and a free press in the assumption that liberty survives only in an atmosphere of free and open expression of thought and opinion, no matter how diverse or uncomfortable. It is a guiding principle of newspapers and broadcast journalism, the so-called media, that ever more dominates our lives and society, and in particular, small, underfunded, and poorly circulated First Amendment publications and limited-range sponsored radio stations that continue against all evidence to believe that human beings ought by right of birth be free. Freedom to differ is not limited to things that do not matter much, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun wrote. That would be a mere shadow of freedom. The test of its substance is the right to differ as to things that touch the heart of the existing order. A workable definition of information and the purposes it serves is necessary, whether it is a source of public dialogue and free exchange of ideas crucial to an open society, or if it should be privately controlled to reflect only certain ideas and points of view. A corollary question is if the use and dissemination of information should be treated as a business regulated by a relative few who seek profit and power from it. The renegade journalist A.J. Liebling, who was generally a dyspeptic about subordination of information, caustically claimed that a free press was available to anyone wealthy enough to own it. Controversy, that feared word, is the language of democracy, the robust dialectic of conflicting opinions. Without controversy, there is no dialogue, only abject obedience to command or directive. The only appropriate response to controversial or unpopular speech or ideas is public rebuttal, not censorship. Yet those who claim to rule in democracy's name continually attempt to enlarge their own powers by limiting the range of ideas and information necessary to engage in the argument of opinion that is indispensable to political and personal freedom. Everyone claims to love the idea of freedom of the press, radio, television, and more recently the internet, but most feel uncomfortable with freedoms they do not endorse, generally regarding them as sources of moral, economic, or patriotic decline of the nation. The right to speak implies a responsibility to those who listen. A listener to free speech is free to tune out the speaker, but shutting up the speaker is quite a different matter. Then the listener is threatening the right of the speaker to speak, which it is not his or her right to do, no matter how uncomfortable, obscene, or absurd. As U.S. Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist wrote in a majority opinion regarding the defamation of religious evangelist Jerry Falwell, who was depicted in a Hustler magazine cartoon incesting his mother in an outdoor toilet, which tread on several taboos, the First Amendment does not only protect the reasonable, but also the outrageous. The persistent attempts by government and groups of powerful elites to control public dialogue, particularly in matters of political and social behavior, has always been dangerous and usually the guise for authoritarian usurpation of the apparatus of communication. Stripping First Amendment rights and freedoms is critical to undermining democracy, especially as protections of thought and expression. The First Amendment has not prevented attempts to impose religious or political orthodoxy. The excessive and blatant repression of the McCarthy era ruined the lives and professions of many of the nation's best writers, artists, and teachers. Censorship of the new internet is disguised as protection of children. Christian fundamentalists in particular have been attempting to ban books from schools and public libraries for decades, and other censorious groups demand control over the contents of school textbooks and suppression of everything from pornography to Mother Goose. To remain at liberty, or at least preserve what remains of our liberties and eventually venture into a more just and compassionate climate, the influx and dissemination of information, ideas, and opinions are necessary. The problem is that it has been nearly sacred doctrine that an informed citizenry will act reasonably and with sound judgment. The reality is that the vast bulk of information and data on virtually every conceivable and esoteric matter from everywhere in the world at all times of day, every day, and the sheer volume of its variety, statistics, factoids, opinion polls, ideas, and perceptions that range from fact-tastic to meretricious, and reportage of events from births to wars to the latest corporate mergers and Wall Street bailouts, and such as the increasing megapoly of the media that cheerfully reports its own confiscation, is incomprehensible. At some point, the beleaguered brain overloads and shuts off. Public apathy is not accidental or the result of not having enough access to information. It is most usually the opposite, a premeditated response to a society awash in paper and verbiage. we know too much. It is this which confounds the believers of information as the temple of freedom. To call through the immensities of twaddle and drivel to discern what is pertinent, or work through the purposely misleading, might finally be too much to require or expect of a citizen. Suppression, after all, fires the wronged spirit. Gluttony buries it. If anyone took stock of the contemporary uses of press and speech freedoms, it should confirm the worst cynicisms about the content of information transmitted as news and entertainment. Emphasis on trivial and scandalous stories rather than focusing on economic, chemical, or environmental issues that affect millions. Banal, violent, and sexually exploitive spectacles blatantly conjured to distract the citizenry from the real business of a democratic society. Controversy, flirtation with original ideas, as well as divergence from status quo journalism is anathema to mega media, which consolidates immense technologies to hype the salacious, mendacious, and indigestible. The nation and its citizens are plugging rapturously into an electronic superhighway of infotainment that proposes infinite possibilities and no few dark prophecies. The information highway is plastic, fluid, and still unpredictable despite political and corporate invasion of its cyberspaces. But the pervasive ambitions of monopoly by government and the newly consolidated mediocrities reverberate through electronic and print networks. Power in the new world corporate capitalist order is shifting to control and manipulation of the immense flow of information, up until recently a vital resource, but now a post-Orwellian system of indoctrination, propaganda, and sensationalism. The growth of huge interlocking newspaper chains and entertainment networks nationally and worldwide has long made news gathering and reporting hostage to advertising and profit, and concentration of ownership threatens the diversity of independent media through which the public is presented multiple views and perceptions. Television, of course, changed everything. Without TV, a person has little to talk about with anyone. The vision television projects has become the prevailing, not to say pervasive, vision of our culture. Even when it is criticized as a narrow, superficial, and self-serving distortion, TV is yet the defining age. It represents, reflects, and is the cause of what we are and how we view ourselves through its one-way prism. More than any other medium or mode of communication, television has precipitated the question of who is in control of the information that assaults us through its flickering window, night and day, in an interminable stream of words and visions. More people watch television than read. Reading, although antique, is yet a relatively recent form of communication, a cumbersome abstract that beams its script directly to the brain and requires forests to provide readable pulp. First radio, now television, and of course film, which is upstage theater, and VCRs and DVDs, return information to its ancient forms of voice and performance. The spoken word is mesmerizing and its eloquence surpasses its content. What might be recognized as hogwash when read is often captivating when spoken or presented visually as melody and form rather than content or substance. MTV and the infamous political commercial soundbite have telescoped the form even more. The greater part of a century of radio TV advertising, during which a daily average of 70% or 80% of Americans have passively accommodated outrageous commercial falsehoods, has probably eroded our capacity to recognize or critically evaluate truth. At some point, language is obscured, transposed from communication to promotion and transaction, from clarification to obfuscation and manipulation. Truth is not necessary, only the appearance of truth, truthiness, or more pertinent, adhering to the principles of advertising. If a lie is told often enough, it is accepted as truth. Agreed upon fictions, that masquerade as reality to distort and manipulate circumstances and are eventually recorded as historical certainty. The trend is that megacorporations are increasingly in control of the information we receive, and they influence political and legal decisions about its use and flow, such as a 1985 Oregon State Supreme Court ruling that corporations, which are classified as individuals under the law, cannot be investigated and reported about without great risk of libel suit. That ruling, which was against a Portland weekly newspaper and favored a major bank, said essentially that while celebrities of the moment can be inexhaustibly exhumed in the media, institutions that affect the lives of millions are virtually sealed off from public scrutiny. Similar to that ruling is the U.S. Supreme Court, as well as the Oregon Supreme Court, interpretation of campaign donations as free speech and citizens concerned, if you remember that. It does not have to be disclosed. Technology, in particular satellites, fiber optics, and computers, has enabled the immense growth of communications conglomerates that are instantaneous and global. Multinational corporations, which might be considered private governments that influence and often dominate public governments, are able to transmit and receive data to, from subsidiaries everywhere on Earth. They are also able to control and manipulate information pertinent to their activities, which gives them powers unanticipated by the framers of the Constitution, whose concerns were limited to the powers of reigning government. The basic idea of communication in the vast centralized societies of the current era is to profit from the self-interested reflexes of couch potato masses and to stimulate world markets. Rarely is education or libertarian stimulation given priority or airtime. Information presented to the American public is in the form of events, which is called news. Ideas and opinions in mainstream media are subdivided into editorial sections of newspapers or as commentary segments of radio, television, newscasts. Most women and men in the news-gathering business do not think of themselves as propagandists or ideologues. On the contrary, most of them earnestly attempt the improbability of objective and unbiased recording of events, incidents, facts, and sometimes account for ideas through opinion polls and random surveys. They try to treat the news, in the words of Gene Fowler, as history shot on the wing. But of course, they reflect the contemporary and cultural biases of their society and ultimately of the industry they serve. The media, and that's capital M media, an intertangled mafia of smoke and mirrors to which truth is ephemeral, chimerical, and expendable, an item of profit and loss. The insidious aspect of the pursuit of objectivity as the cornerstone of modern journalism is that inevitably the form is used to disguise and project very partisan ideas and perspectives by those who manage and rule society and own the major media. The corporations, sitting on the windpipe of the First Amendment, as Jeff Cohen of FAIR calls them, project the nurtured myth of a left liberal media, which has a purpose of intimidating working journalists, most of whom are, after all, corporate employees, to avoid liberalism as a professional plague. If indeed there is a left liberal media in the USA, it would critically examine bloated Pentagon budgets, Star Wars, oil drilling in natural preserves, laissez fairy tales, Norman Solomon's phrase, aid to dependent corporations and banks. The real purpose of the press media is little understood, which is as much its own fault as it is from public skepticism and distrust. The people expect event and spectacle, which are ardently chronicled, and the infotainment mediocrity provides instant celebrity and fashion, as well as scandal, as instantly recycled and refashioned. But the central function of the media is to act as the public conscience and critical watchdog of authority, the cry of alarm when authority is exceeded or corrupt. It must act as a forum and instrument of public dialogue and debate, presenting differing views, even as U.S. Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said, expressions of opinion that we loathe and believe to be fraught with death. The media, in all its hydra forms, does an inadequate job. It is probably impossible to examine, publish, and broadcast the billions of bits of data generated every day. There is too much to write about, to televise and report, to think about, to debate and discuss, and it moves too quickly, changes too rapidly, to pin down well enough or process adequately. In response to the impossible glut of information, a significant trend in media traffic is paradoxically toward specific or more ominously specialized audiences. Mainstreaming more often seems to mean segmenting into selective user groups that become hermetically sealed by appropriate media. Consolidation and distortion of a free press have continually given rise to small newspapers and magazines and to independent radio stations and such as Astoria's KMUN-FM and Portland's KBOO, whose only allegiance is to the First Amendment. National public broadcasting, highly praised and severely criticized, is buffeted by corporate aspirations and political sabotage. The independent media, which has few pretensions towards objectivity and fewer illusions about its probability, provides an insistent and vital forum that mega media ignores for the exchange, analysis, understanding, and argument of issues that are at the base of every culture and society. Its lineage reaches back to the rough and prickly press that gave birth to the First Amendment, and though it seldom reflects popular opinion and operates on the cultural edge where mega media fears to go, independent micromedia is powered by the belief that if it does not remain free, nothing soon afterward will be free. No one should ever be surprised that a government does not encourage liberty or independent opinion among its subjects. Democracies are elaborate power balances between diverse parties that constantly seek advantage over the others. A most important assumption of a democracy is that the flow of information should not be tampered with nor be restricted if democracy is to survive the incessant tugs of war between its parties. But of course, interfering with and manipulating information is among the highest priorities of political power, which accurately assumes the general populace will not give much thought to mind control efforts most of the time. People who listen to independent radio stations like KMUN wish for more than babble shrieking from the radios, and viewers of public broadcasting search for more than the drivel and schlock beamed to the masses by commercial networks. Yet intimidation by the FCC, the gestating ministry of truth Orwell predicted would rise to be the temple of the state, suppresses creativity and controversy. Risk-taking, essential to creativity and independence, shrivels to mumbles of acquiescence. We should remember Orwell. He invented a language, newspeak, which was based on erasing unwanted ideas in the pretense of simplifying the public dialogue. He warned that what is removed from language is forgotten in the individual and collective mind. Orwell was wrong, though, when he suggested that a propaganda system depended upon violent coercion. Instead, in a post-Orwellian world, we suffer the benign control of a powerful system of indoctrination and propaganda that needs little coercion to set an agenda for what people will think about. Policing public morality, claiming, of course, that it is only being reflected, is usually an indecently popular and effective method of intruding control over what we read in our newspapers, listen to on our radios, and view on our televisions, and are ultimately persuaded to accept as truth and reality, when in reality our vision has been distorted, our perception atrophied, as are our personal values and liberties. There is no single right or truth, nor is there a single wrong or deceit. Shades fog every issue, denying absolutes no matter how insistently projected. A free and open flow of information, regardless of ideology or opinion, despite the strenuous labor of separating truth from fiction, deceit, gossip, and obscenity, information from disinformation, is quite truthfully the only method of preserving what remains of our freedoms and the only chance to enlarge them in a turbulent world that is still recoiling from the collapse of a morbidly tyrannical and static empire that claimed to be a dictatorship of the people. The First Amendment is unequivocal. Nothing shall abridge freedom of speech, therefore freedom of thought. It is our distinguishing ideal, unfortunately more in theory than actuality. Not our wealth or world power, nor our system of acquisition and consumption is as important as the inspired attempt to reverse history and make it possible for people to be equal and independent under laws of their own choice. Judge Learned Hand should have the last word. Liberty dies in the hearts of men and women. When it dies there, no constitution, no law, no court can save it. You've been listening to A Story Told. I'm Michael McCusker.